This is episode 289 of Jumblethink.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1...
Welcome to Jumblethink, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning their dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. Our guest on today's show is LeVar Burton. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you've never subscribed to Jumblethink, right now is a great time to do it. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and now even Pandora. So head on over to your favorite place to listen to podcasts, search for Jumblethink, and click that magical subscribe button. Now let's jump into today's interview with LeVar Burton. Hey there, welcome to Jumblethink. My name is Michael Woodward, and I am your host. We have an incredible show lined up for you today. It's a show I've personally been working on for a long time, and it's an honor to have a dream guest of mine join us today. I know for many of you, this may be the first time you've ever listened to an episode of Jumblethink. For that matter, it might even be the first time you've ever even heard of Jumblethink. Well, thank you so much for joining us, tagging along for our conversation with today's guest, LeVar Burton. Now, LeVar has had a broad impact into the lives of many of us. You may have grown up watching him host Reading Rainbow, or first saw him as Kunta Kinte in Roots. But for many of you listening, you fell in love with his character from Star Trek Next Generation, Geordi LaForge. LeVar hosts two podcasts, LeVar Burton Reads, and his Stitcher Premium bonus series called Stories with Friends. We've included links to those shows in the episode notes. You really should go check them out. They are wonderful shows. I tune into them every week, and I think you're going to love them too. So let's go ahead and join the conversation we had with today's guest, actor, director, producer, author, TV host, and podcast host, LeVar Burton. LeVar, thank you so much for taking time out.
My pleasure, Michael. I'm pleased and not a little surprised.
Well, I have spent the last couple months just looking into your life, and there was a lot of surprises along the way. I think one of the biggest surprises was that you didn't set out as a child to become an actor.
No, not at all.
And to me, that's pretty incredible. Tell us a little bit about that journey of being in seminary, having faith as kind of the direction you were going, and making that pivot into acting.
I was raised Catholic primarily, solely, because my mother was an English teacher.
Wow.
From her native Missouri, Kansas City. My mom was an overachiever, even for a black woman in her time. She was the first person in her family to go to college. She graduated from Philander Smith, an historically black university in Arkansas, at the age of 17. That was her first degree.
Irma Jean Christian.
Right. Her first degree was in English language literature. Her second degree was in social work, a master's of social work in MSW, which she earned while working full-time as a social worker during the day, going to school, night school. Raising three kids by herself.
Yeah.
So my mom knew the value of a Catholic school education in California in the 60s. It was indeed quite valuable.
Up in Sacramento, right?
In Sacramento, California. Yeah. That's where I'm from. It's where I was raised. The seminary experience was one that was really ingrained in me, and it was all self-motivated, self-directed. I decided to become a priest when I was really, really young, about 8 or 9.
Wow.
And pursued it as soon as I possibly could and entered formal training at the age of 13. So by the time I had Lee Bartlett in my second year at St. Pius, I was already beginning to really re-examine all of the tenets of Catholicism that I'd always bumped up against.
Yeah. Like what kind of things? When you say tenets that you bumped up against, what were the things that...
I had questions.
Okay.
Right? I had questions about I had questions about the resurrection. I had questions about the crucifixion. I had questions about the tenet that the Catholic faith is the one true faith, and that you know, and that I had questions about babies being born and going to hell because they weren't baptized. I mean, I just yeah. had a lot of questions that the traditional dogma and the and its attendant sort of pablum of have faith,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Just wasn't getting it done. Having faith or believing in the mystery was no longer a sufficient enough answer
yeah.
for me. I wanted real answers to real questions that I was beginning to ask myself. Who am
yeah.
I?
Yeah.
What am I really doing here? I mean,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
You know, why am I here? What is my purpose
yeah.
in life? So yeah. those questions led me away from, out of the seminary and away from Catholicism and right into the arms of theater arts. So, because, you know, in trying to determine what I was now going to do with the rest of my life, having decided at the age of 8 to become a priest and at the age of 16, 17, deciding, well, no, not so much. What the hell am I going to do?
Yeah.
And theater arts was the answer. It was something that upon examination, I had passion for.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
I think it's played out well. I think for me, one of the things that I've wondered as I've read different accounts, interviews, as I've listened, is in that journey of moving from faith and into the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still have a faith?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. My faith has gone through changes over time.
Okay.
You know, from you know, the altar boy seminarian who did as was instructed and,
yeah.
you know, and just had faith.
Yeah.
Unshakable faith.
Yeah.
In the mystery.
Yeah.
Of, you know, the whole thing, the Holy Trinity and all of it, the point of view. It was never a question of not having faith. It was just a question of how much or how little organized religion was going to be a part of my belief,
yeah,
my system of faith going forward. And as it turns out, not so much.
Wow. And I think that right now in history, there's a shift from that. A lot of people wanting more from faith,
from the that which they invest their. Yeah. Their faith. They want somewhat more of a return than they feel that they're getting. Right now, a lot of the dynamic of the relationship between flocks and their churches is a dynamic that reflects the obsession that we have in this culture with money. So it's
yeah.
it's
that prosperity.
That prosperity kind of thing and the church always seems to do just fine, you know, by making sure that they have people to tithe and fill those collection plates to sustain themselves. And, you know, and how much value are we really getting
yeah.
From these institutions is becoming the question, I think.
And you look, and this is not the direction I foresee the first part of our interview going, but I think it's a good conversation. I think if we look at whether it's a Christian faith and the tenets of those faith and what Christ commanded.
Yeah. They're very, very different.
Yeah, very
you know,
different.
From the behaviors of a lot of people who wear collars and stand in pulpits on Sunday. My point is this. I separate the notions of faith and religion.
Mm. So the dogmas of man versus the intimacy of
my relationship connection. With, yeah, my connection with that which I determined to be a higher power.
Wow.
Than myself.
Wow.
And because there's no middleman, there's no interpreter between me and my God, there's no intercession necessary on my part. I can go straight to my source,
wow,
my creator source, and have that conversation whenever I want, and I'm good with that.
That's super powerful.
It is for me.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's as real to me as was the other when I was on that path toward priesthood.
Yeah.
I mean, I take my spiritual journey very seriously
yeah.
in life.
Yeah. Now, you didn't know this before we came into the interview. I spent my first 8 years in career world as a pastor at a church.
Really? Where?
Northern California in Chico, Oroville, California.
I know Oroville.
Yeah. So worked with a really cool church doing a lot to impact recovery of meth addiction.
Wow.
With a lot of youth. I was a youth pastor. And what was amazing about it was that for a middle-class American church, which is where I come from, there's a difference from everything's okay. Most people in middle-class America have everything that they could ever want.
It's the American dream, isn't it?
But when you go to a place where the decisions you make and blowing off the person that comes to see you could literally mean the difference between life and death because you don't know what they're going through, it changed my faith.
What do you mean?
What I mean is that so often we write off the person that's in front of us.
What do you? Give me an example.
Yeah. So there's a guy that went to the church.
Okay.
In his 40s, I think.
All right.
And he was going through relapse.
Okay.
And there were times we probably could have made more time for him.
Okay.
In that addiction.
All right.
And he ended up dying from a physical crash of crashing a car into a tree coming off of meth.
Wow.
And it changes that perspective because my interaction with my fellow man, that humanity, that touch of each other, all of a sudden I see people differently. Like, I don't know what you're going through.
Right.
You don't know what I'm going through. But the reality is that you're the most significant thing I have going on in this moment.
In this now moment, right.
And our connection in this world with technology,
right.
With being
present. Right.
That's
our challenge in the modern world today,
you were
isn't
talking
it?
About that with your interview with Bill Nye, and you were talking about mindfulness.
Yeah, to be present in the moment is, I based on my investigation, one of the things that all spiritual traditions point to as being one of the things you want to do. You want to try and stay as present as you can. You want to be, you want your awareness to be such that you are rooted in the now.
Yeah. And so much of what we do is consuming each other as information now.
Yes.
And not intimacy. There's a difference.
No, there's a difference between information, sharing information, and intimacy.
Yeah.
The state of intimacy.
Yeah. I want to pivot here because there's an important conversation that I want to have with you about storytelling. Before we do that, I want to take a moment and thank your wife, Stephanie, for making this happen.
Yeah. We had a lot of fits and starts. You know? It's been well over a year more that we've been trying to make this happen.
Yeah, and she's an incredibly gracious and kind person.
I'm married a goddess.
Have a very wonderful wife and partner in crime.
The fact that my wife has operated as my personal assistant for the past 2 years and we are still married is a testament to just what a saint that woman is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we started the interview, said something, and I mean it. If there's one thing I would categorize you as, from my perspective of seeing you in culture, is that you are a master storyteller. And that seems to be your passion is...
Storytelling is. I mean, the master part, I don't know. I feel I look at myself as a journeyman, right?
Okay.
I've only been doing this 40 years. Seriously.
Wow.
I mean, if you look at the tradition of storytellers and storytelling, you know, and I definitely feel honored by that, that you see that in me. It's how I see myself.
Yeah.
I see myself as a storyteller, and whether I'm acting or directing, producing, writing, podcasting, I'm an itinerant storyteller. I go from place to place. I make speeches. I read aloud. I tell stories for a living. And I'm really lucky and consider myself so fortunate to be able to actually support myself and my family by being a storyteller.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool job.
Yeah.
I kind of hit the jackpot in this lifetime.
How did you craft that skill? There are a lot of people who, just like comics, they think they're funny.
Right.
Or they think they're good at telling a story, but they get into that party that they go to.
Yeah.
And people come up to them and they feel trapped because they're like, oh, this story again.
It all began for me with reading.
Yeah.
You know, my journey as a storyteller definitely began with reading and the love for the written word that was inculcated into me by my mother, Irma Jean. My mom was an avid reader.
Yeah. Where did you know, I've never heard you talk about where her passion for learning came from.
She was the first person in her family to graduate from college. So she was and she graduated, her first degree, like I said, was in English language literature. So,
which is not an easy thing.
So my mom was a reader.
Yeah.
You know, she loved books.
Yeah.
She loved to read. So I definitely, I not only inherited, you know, that through her DNA, both physical and spiritual, but I also had that primary example growing up that, you know, reading was what we did.
Yeah.
You know, we took two newspapers. She always had books going for her, you know, for pleasure. She read a lot while she was going for her MSW.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, you know, reading was, there was no question that we read more than we watched TV.
Yeah.
In the house that I grew up in.
Yeah.
Television was relegated to more a weekend, and really leisurely thing.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time it was about reading.
Yeah.
Or doing chores.
Now, I don't know what Sacramento was like when you were growing up. Although, congratulations, you have a park named after you, which is super cool. You look embarrassed, though.
I do. Well, I got to admit, it's slightly embarrassing because it is, you know.
Yeah.
It's nothing that I ever expected to have happen. It's nothing I ever saw coming.
Wow.
But there is a park, in not just in Sacramento where I grew up, it's in the neighborhood where I grew up. It's literally down the street and around the corner from where I lived as a child.
Wow.
And so to have my city, my hometown, think of me in that way is profound. It's had a really, really profound impact on me personally. And coming so quickly on the heels of the death of my mother, both my mother and my younger sister, who were my last, what I believed to be my last physical ties to the city of Sacramento, and discovering roughly 6 months after the death of my younger sister that my ties to Sacramento are ongoing. They will be evergreen as long as I'm here and as long as that park is there.
Yeah.
My connection with Sacramento will be alive.
Super cool.
Yeah, it is.
I know that Sacramento's kind of, in the last couple of years, gone through last 20 years, hard times, good times.
Mm-hmm. Like the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Right.
For you, do you think that the passion of reading maybe saved you from getting involved in some of the things that Sacramento's known for now?
Look, my neighborhood, Meadowview, some people call it Ghetto View.
Yeah.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah.
I'm from the straight up hood.
Yeah.
And I know that my mother's love and devotion and commitment to giving me a way out, an education. She always said, believed, and acted upon the belief that an education was the leveler of the playing field, and that in spite of the color of my skin, if I were educated properly, I would be able to succeed on the same plane as the white kids.
Yeah.
Right? And she was right.
Yeah.
I grew up in that kind of an America.
Yeah.
Where in spite of the deck being stacked against me, I rose.
Yeah.
Because I was programmed to rise.
And that was what is expected of you.
It was what was expected of me, yes.
I went to a really good high school growing up, a good school program throughout my entire life. And I think if I were to categorize my experience of learning there, it was you were expected to succeed.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's one of the things that we're losing in our culture right now is an expectation to do your best.
Sure, I see that too. I see it every day. We've so lowered our standards in this country, in this culture.
Yeah.
You know, we've lowered our standards in so many ways, big and small. And yes, we have stopped challenging our children for the most part to be their best by expecting them to be their best, expecting them to rise and giving them the space and grace to do that.
Yeah.
You know, when we resort to paying as parents hundreds and in some cases thousands of dollars to circumvent the admissions process for higher education,
yeah.
we've really got to step back and
yeah.
take a good look at ourselves.
Yeah.
We have, you know, we have created a generation of, you know, millennials take a lot of knocks for being selfish and not wanting to work and a whole host of other things. And I'm not saying I haven't encountered that in the millennial population. I have. But they are also the first generation to not automatically expect to do better financially than their parents.
Yeah.
In fact, most of them have or expect to at some point before they're finished adulting, move back in
yeah.
to their parents' home.
Yeah.
And our generation, my generation, is leaving them a real mess to clean up environmentally on this planet. And my goal is to keep them engaged by keeping them connected to their imaginations. It's one of the reasons why I do the podcast,
yeah.
LeVar Burton Reads. Number one, I do it because I love it, because, you know, I looked at podcasts as an opportunity to be a storyteller, and there was
yeah.
no real barrier
yeah.
to entry.
Yeah, no.
There was no studio saying, well, yeah, we think that's a good idea, right? It's like, all I need is a microphone and a story, and it's
yeah.
on,
yeah.
right? Because I love reading aloud. It's one of my favorite modalities of storytelling.
Do you read out loud to yourself when you're
when I'm preparing a story for this podcast? I do. Yeah, when I'm reading a story for consideration, if I get really excited, I will slip into that voice, right? That narrator voice, and I'll try it out in my head to see how it feels and see what character voices come. And yeah, absolutely. Stories are designed to inspire us to engage with them on the level of high art.
Yeah.
Imagination.
Yeah.
Making the pictures in your head.
Yeah.
Making the ephemeral real.
Yeah.
That's magic.
Yeah.
It's alchemy, turning thought
yeah.
and word into solid form.
Yeah.
That's a special experience only accessible to sentient beings.
Yeah. yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Storytelling, because it only informs everything about who we are as a species,
yeah.
why we're here, where we're going.
What makes us unique?
What makes us unique? All of that is contained in the storytelling and the stories that we pass on to succeeding generations. Right? About who we are,
yeah.
about the important things of the nature of this journey.
We're going to take a break right here, and we're going to be right back to go deeper into LeVar Burton Reads. We're going to talk about the craft of story more, and then our rapid fire questions.
Uh-oh. Okay.
JumbleThink truly is all about the story of ideas, but more specifically, your ideas and your dreams. We believe you were created for something awesome, that your dreams and ideas matter. But for many of us, we choose not to chase those dreams, to create those ideas. It could be fear. It could be obligations that are holding us back. It could be the time or finances. Whatever is holding you back, often it is compounded by the simple fact that you are not connected with a community of dreamers and idea makers. Today, I am inviting you to become part of the JumbleThink community. You can head on over to your favorite social media channel like Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter, and let's be friends. Let's journey together. Let's chase those dreams and ideas together. We believe you're created for great things. It's time to get out there and dream big and change the world around you. Now let's rejoin the conversation with today's guest, LeVar Burton. We are back with LeVar Burton. All right. Where can people find LeVar Burton Reads?
it's a podcast. So wherever you get your podcasts,
yeah,
it's available. It's co-produced. I produce the podcast along with Stitcher.
Yeah.
So you can find it in the Stitcher app, but it's available on iTunes and on Google Play and everywhere.
Yeah.
You get your podcasts. A19. Yeah. I mean, it's out there.
Yeah.
You just have to Google LeVar Burton Reads. And,
yeah.
And you'll find it.
Super cool. I've been listening for a while to the show.
Have you?
Yeah, you're at episode, I think, 53 as of this week.
This is season 5.
Yes.
Right, that's right.
And there's a couple stories that stuck out to me.
Oh, wow. I'm always interested to know how the readers respond.
Cuisine des Memories.
Yes.
Which is a very fascinating story.
It is, isn't it?
A story about being transported to a place based on a memory
right.
of a food experience.
That's correct. This magical restaurant
yeah.
that has this magical kitchen.
Yeah. and what's interesting to me, and I don't know if you got this out of the book or the short story.
The story, uh-huh.
Was that in a way it's saying it's not always best to experience the ghosts of your past.
Mm.
And sometimes it is.
Mm.
And sometimes mm-hmm. those memories are much deeper. You were talking to Bill Nye about this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of the callers called in and said something, and you responded with something similar to this, that our memory of stories isn't always accurate.
That's correct.
Of the story.
That's correct.
But it leaves us. And for me, I was thinking about back of like the first memory I have of you.
Uh-huh.
It was reading Rainbow.
Okay.
I remember going to my grandparents' house and the adults would be out front.
Right.
They'd be hanging out and that kind of thing. And we'd be bored to death. So we'd either go swing on the tire swing out in their front yard on this hill, which right. probably shouldn't have had a swing on it.
But it did. It was cool.
But it did. And people didn't care about their kids
no,
back then.
Not at all. Not at all.
And I remember going to the back room and I'd watch Reading Rainbow,
mm-hmm.
MathNet,
mm.
which was another PBS
show,
which most people don't remember.
Remember, right.
And then I remember as I got older, that turning into The Hunt for Carmen Sandiego.
Uh-huh.
Where in the World is Carmen
Sandiego?
That's
right.
And I remember that. And I remember a specific episode, and it was...
Of Reading Rainbow. Mm-hmm.
Digging Up Dinosaur Bones.
Wow. Digging Up Dinosaurs was the book. We were at the Jensen, Utah National Park.
Monument.
Monument.
Yeah.
Where they're finding ancient fossils yeah. of dinosaurs that once roamed the Arizona desert.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny. We were originally going to do this interview with you in June,
okay.
I think.
Okay, all right, yeah.
And right around that same time, I actually went out and dug for dinosaur bones in South Dakota.
Wow.
Found Triceratops vertebrae and raptor teeth and all kinds of crazy
How
stuff.
How exciting was that?
And so I was just thinking as I prepared for this, just the kind of craziness of that memory
yeah.
coming back in my mind of being like, that's the first memory I have
right.
that is really vivid for Reading Rainbow and for you. Anyway.
That's cool.
I want to know, how do you pick your stories? What captivates you in a story? What makes you go, that's a story I want to tell?
Mm. Well, I'm a big fan of the short fiction form.
Mm.
I always have been. I've always loved reading short stories. I mean, yeah. going back to Discovery of O. Henry and, you know, and Edgar Allan Poe and,
yeah.
you know.
Do you primarily read just fiction?
I balance more toward fiction than nonfiction.
Okay.
I do. Yeah, especially when reading for enjoyment. And then it gets even more narrow, the field.
Yeah.
It gets narrowed down to basically science fiction and fantasy.
Yeah.
I mean, I read a lot of novels too.
Yeah.
But right now I'm reading almost exclusively, I'm reading short fiction to find stories for the podcast.
Yeah.
And for me, the bottom line is it's got to be something that I really feel like I could have fun reading.
Yeah.
Out loud.
Yeah.
That's really the litmus test.
Yeah.
The length is important because it needs to be a story that you know, I can do an intro and a postmortem in under an hour. You know,
yeah.
I don't want the podcast to be longer than that. So
you've had a couple episodes, I think one or two, where you've broken it
into two different
yeah.
because it was a story that I really wanted to do and didn't want to suffer through any edit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes you just got to give your audience the benefit of the doubt
yeah.
and rely on their intelligence
yeah.
to stick with it over two episodes, a yeah. singular story, right?
Yeah.
But But yeah, it's really basically boils down to what I want to read aloud and how much excitement the prospect of that generates in me.
One of the things I love about LeVar Burton Reads and listening to the show is the stories that you pick.
Mm-hmm. They're highly curated.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, for a couple of reasons, right? One, I'm doing this for me, so I'm reading what I like. But two, there is an unintended benefit in that I get to maintain this relationship, certainly with the audience that grew up on the show, who are adults now, right? Who are listening to the podcast.
The podcast is focused adults.
It is. Oh yeah. This is not for children.
Right.
This is adult content.
Right.
And I'm speaking specifically to the audience of adults now who grew up with reading Rainbow. And I'm, as we alluded to earlier, I'm trying to keep them connected to their imaginations.
Yeah.
Simply because I do believe that they're going to need their imaginations going forward to solve a lot of the problems that we are dumping in their laps.
Yeah. And you asked me before we started,
sorry.
You asked me, why would you want me on your show? Aren't you focused more on entrepreneurship?
Right, right.
And I think the truth of the matter is that it takes unique and contrary ideas to solve complex problems.
I believe that, yeah.
I think one of the biggest problems we have with the educational world right now is that we're teaching people systems and structures and not teaching them critical thinking.
No, we're not.
And so for me, when you talk about imagination, I look at it and go, imagination is the spark that solves problems.
Absolutely is.
Whether it's a business problem, it takes imagination. Whether it's a story problem, whether it's a teaching problem.
A societal problem.
Yeah.
It's imagination that bridges the gap between where we are and where we could potentially go. Imagination is always in that gap somewhere.
Yeah.
Filling in, giving us the roadmap between here and there. It's why science fiction and Star Trek, more specifically, shaped my worldview so strongly. Mm. Right? I grew up loving science fiction literature, but precious little of it had representation of characters who looked like me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Roddenberry's vision was different in that respect.
Yeah.
Nichelle Nichols was part of the command structure. She was a respected member of the crew.
Yeah.
That spoke volumes
to
me as a kid and a science fiction fan.
Yeah.
And Gene's vision has always been that positive, hopeful, expectant vision of the future that I've aligned myself with wanting to help create.
Yeah.
I believe in our ability to get to a place where we are really humming along, cooperating more than we compete with one another and really thinking all of the time about how to make it better here, not just for a handful of people, but really genuinely for everyone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Really spreading the resources around, not in a socialistic way, which has become such a buzzword of negativity in political discourse these days, but really just being smart about creating out of an abundance.
Yeah.
That this planet offers enough for everyone.
Well, and I think that that's the thing that's interesting is that when we look at these issues, whether it's diversity, whether it's the environment, whether it's people often are looking at solutions, whether it's because it's politicized or whatnot, because of an agenda.
Yeah. Right.
But I look at it, and it's a very simple problem, all of these issues. It's a matter of being good stewards of what we're given.
I hear you. Absolutely.
I think that, like, if I look at culture where we are when it comes to a race issue, I'm a 38-year-old white guy. I came from middle-class America. You are...
In my 60s.
Yeah.
Black man. Always have been. Always will be.
Yeah.
And the difference in our experiences
Yeah.
totally shape how we experience the world.
That is so true. And yet, without each other, without that perspective, without that worldview and experience, we are less. Like, your impact for me in reading Rainbow was huge, sure. And for countless others, mm-hmm. that experience. Mm-hmm. You brought something to that DNA
mm-hmm.
that it ran from, like, what, 83 to 2006?
26 seasons, yeah.
Yeah. And 150-something episodes.
Some odd episodes, yeah. Uh-huh.
If you wouldn't have had the opportunity to do that,
right.
Think of the story of reading as an outlet to explore and right. adventure and to imagine.
Yeah.
We need each other.
Yeah, I believe that to be true about the human condition
yeah.
entirely.
Yeah.
We need one another.
Yeah.
And all this realm is opportunities to recognize that and act upon it.
Yeah.
We need each other. And yeah. You know, we're a work in progress. We're consistency
yeah.
in that realm
yeah.
Goes.
So I want to pivot here on one thing as we wrap up this segment, mm-hmm. and that is part of storytelling is creating character.
Yeah.
And you've done it at multiple levels. You've done it as an actor, mm-hmm. as a podcaster, as a director.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've even produced some things.
Mm-hmm. Writer.
Mm-hmm. Writer.
Mm-hmm.
You have the privilege of not only being an actor in Roots, but actually then helping bring it back.
That's right. To tell the story to another generation, yeah.
As a part of a storyteller, whether it's in any of these spaces as a vocation,
mm-hmm.
how do you approach character differently?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
Oh.
I don't. The characters are the lifeblood of the narrative.
Yeah.
They're what keeps us engaged.
Yeah.
Being on the journey with someone with whom we feel any sort of connection mm. to, be it based on our similarities or our differences.
Yeah.
Without character, we don't have story. So yeah. and the amazing truth about life is that every encounter we are meeting yet another character in the story of our lives, and how we treat that character. I think it goes back to, you know, what you were talking about in terms of your experience as a pastor.
Yeah.
What I call the story listener, right? Because mm. there's always a storyteller,
yeah.
right, in my business, but there's also a story listener, right? So if you are able to engage the story listener on a level where they are relating to your, so the characters in your story, then you have their attention. And when you have yeah. their attention, then you can deliver a message.
We're going to take one last break here, and then we're going to come back for rapid fire questions with LeVar Burton.
All right.
Are you loving today's show? Make sure you go check out more of JumbleThink. We have hundreds of episodes ranging from leading entrepreneurs to authors to Olympic athletes. So head on over to JumbleThink.com and check out more of the show. Now let's jump into rapid fire questions with LeVar Burton. We are back with LeVar Burton. Are you ready for rapid fire questions?
I hope so.
These are tough.
All right.
But first, we're going to do some listener questions. So right. A little bit of suspense there for our listeners.
You keep jerking me around, Michael.
I don't know.
Oh, I'm yeah. pins and needles over here.
Brian asks, between Roots, Star Trek, and Reading Rainbow, what was your favorite and why?
Oh, that's such an unfair question.
Well, let me broaden it.
Okay.
Out of everything that you've created and worked on,
yeah.
what is the one that you feel most connected with?
Again, such an unfair question. Really. But if with a gun to my head, I have to go with Reading Rainbow.
Okay.
Do
you consider that your legacy?
Yes.
Okay.
I do. Yeah, I do. And that's, you know, I mean, I really consider that the triple crown, you know, in my career thus far anyway, Roots, Star Trek and Reading Rainbow it's a trifecta that any actor would be proud
yeah.
to have.
Yeah.
As am I.
Yeah.
I am enormously proud of those three pieces of work in particular. And as important as Roots is and has been to this country and its understanding of itself. And as important on a personal level, the storytelling of Gene Roddenberry has been in, as I say, the shaping of my own worldview. I think it's reading Rainbow that has had the most impact. Mm. And for a storyteller, there's nothing that beats the feeling of reaching an audience.
Dave asks, and I think this is a great question to follow up with what you just said. He said, to me as a kid, Roots was enlightening to what African Americans endured.
Yes.
Dave, I believe, is Hispanic mm-hmm. in his descent, so he has mm-hmm. that kind of...
Mm-hmm. Different kind of immigrant experience.
Yes.
But America is a nation of immigrants.
Yes. So he said, what was the role controversial at the time, and what was the response to it for you?
Well, I wouldn't say that the role was controversial. It was the fact that it was made at all was extraordinary, because America had never told itself the story of slavery so in such an unvarnished fashion before. America doesn't do a really good job of telling its own story, mm-hmm. at least not very faithfully.
Yeah,
you know. We do a lot of avoidance. I mean, we talk about Manifest Destiny as having been the sort of the reason or the justification for British Europeans to come here and steal this land from the people who were on it and kill them.
Yeah.
In the event that they resisted, which they did, anybody would. And then the land grab that followed, and then to take that land and turn it into the most profitable economy on the planet with the help of chattel slavery. We didn't tell ourselves the truth about that story either. We talked about slavery as an economic institution, not the brutal, brutal, hateful, spiteful practice that it was. Because you have to understand that in order to make chattel slavery okay in the mind of a slave owner, you have to convince yourself that the person that you are enslaving is not human.
Mm.
And you have to continue to come up with ways to justify that belief that you are trying to buy into, that you're trying to tell yourself, the belief that that person is not human,
yeah.
that person is more akin to an animal mm-hmm. than it is to me
yeah.
as a thinking human being possessing reason and morals and
yeah.
morality,
yeah.
right? You have to be deep in self-delusion to the point where you can enslave your own illegitimate children.
So,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
You have to be in deep denial.
Yeah, I mean, it's a darkness.
It's the darkness that America has never owned.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, never owned.
And you know, I think for me, the question I would want to ask you in that,
yeah,
as a white guy who doesn't know better,
right?
How much of that is educated poorly and having a misunderstanding of the history.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's why Roots was so important, because for the first time, we were telling the story of slavery in America from the perspective of the black people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was new.
So for me...
That was new.
Yeah, for me, it's like one of those things where I come in and I have a lot of friends that are black men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Love them dearly.
Mm-hmm.
They've been massively significant, those individuals in my life, in mm-hmm. pretty critical times.
Mm-hmm.
As I was saying before, for Reading Rainbow,
mm-hmm.
without you, mm-hmm. that would have had a different impact. Because
right.
you impacted the way that was told. How do we... Roots was a good start to rediscover that. The history.
Yeah, it was.
And that discovery. I grew up in a place that... I've heard the story of slavery.
Right.
But not from that personal standpoint. That's so clear. How do we bring restoration to that? And what would you say my responsibility as an individual is in that story?
I don't think anybody's ever asked me that question before. I'll answer the second part first. Be open to the stories of other people.
Yeah.
Right? Just because it's not a story that comes from your own personal experience doesn't mean that the story or the characters are invalid.
Right.
Be open to the reality of other people's stories.
Yeah.
Is the best way I can put it. In order to be an ally in the social justice arena, it is important to recognize for white people what I call my melanin challenge, brothers and sisters. It's important for you all to recognize that white privilege is real, and that the definition of white privilege is not having to think about how much privilege you have. And just bring to those moments an open and compassionate heart that will enable you to see the world through the lens of someone who looks like me.
Yeah.
Because it's a different, I live in a different America than you do.
Yeah.
Normally, on a day-to-day basis.
Wow.
And you would never know that.
No.
And it's true.
So when you boil it down, move past the assumptions.
Yeah.
And start having real conversations.
That's the only way we're going to get it done, brother.
Wow. Wow. That's a conversation that's much deeper than we can cover right here. But I hope that this was at least a spark in that conversation for some people.
I believe that if we are willing to sit down and be in the moment with another person long enough, even if they have views that are polar opposite to our own.
Yeah.
But if I'm willing to sit down with you and look for commonality,
yeah,
we'll find it.
Yeah.
We'll find it.
One of my favorite people in the world, I'm pretty transparent because I think bias should be something we talk about when it comes to understanding our bias. I tend to be on the conservative.
We all have unconscious bias.
I mean, and I think that's one of the biggest problems with media is that there's this perception of unbiased in the biased.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I tend to be pretty conservative, but one of my favorite people in the world is pretty liberal. And we have some amazing conversations from that perspective. And a lot of times we see the same problem. We just see different ways to getting to a healthy solution.
Absolutely.
And so
we need to give each other the benefit of the doubt in these conversations more and come from a place of, I know you mean me no harm.
Yeah.
Especially by what you believe.
Yeah.
So let's accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, right?
Yeah.
In our connection here, because we will have much more success at genuinely communicating.
Yeah.
Or communicating in a genuine way.
Yeah.
If we just eliminate those things that drive us crazy about one another and find that commonality as quickly as we can.
Super cool. Two more questions. These ones should be easy ones when it comes to listener. First one is, Chris asks, LeVar has always been super cool in my book. I would like to know, after The Next Generation, did he keep one of the visors?
There was only one that I wore every day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you keep it?
Yes. I did.
Nice.
Yeah. What are you kidding? Of course.
And probably one of the most important questions from our audience comes from my wife.
Oh yeah.
She gets a vote more than anyone else in this show. And she asks, there's the new Star Trek Picard coming out.
Yeah.
Are we going to see you in it?
I don't know.
Ah.
I imagine so. I mean, I'm not in it.
Okay.
I'm certainly not in the first season.
Okay.
In the first 10 episodes. But I don't believe that these are the only 10 that we will see. So. I've been on the set a couple of times and Patrick is having so much fun and he's so at the top of his game. I mean, it's amazing the work that he's doing. And I think that the story that they're telling is really, really inventive. And it's one that lends itself to being able to see all of us, maybe not at all at the same time in the same place, but he still knows those people and they're still a part of one another's lives. I've got to believe.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you'll see us all at one point or another.
Well, friendship is something that seems to be really significant to you.
Yeah.
I know that you directed and were in one of the episodes of NCIS New Orleans this season. Our last season.
I direct two episodes a season, and I was out actually also in one. They wrote a character that I played, Rufus Rufus Nero, Naval Intelligence.
Some love interest. You might be back.
We'll see. I love Scott Bakula. Obviously, we have great history.
Because you directed Enterprise, Summer of Enterprise too.
I directed a lot of Enterprise, and so we go way back. And it's just a really wonderful sense of family down there in New Orleans where they make the show, and they've embraced me as a part of their family. And you know, who doesn't love that?
Yeah. Well, I know that we're crunched on time, so let's fly through some rapid fire questions.
All right, here we go, rapid fire.
All right. As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
A priest.
And what is one tip you'd give someone with a big idea and dream and they don't know where to start?
Let's take the first step. The next step will reveal itself. Life is like a controlled fall. Walking and life are controlled falls. Mm. Take the first step. The next step will be there. You will not fall flat on your face. Trust me. And if you do, it's perfectly fine. It's all a part of it. Your failures can lead to your biggest lessons along the way. Don't be afraid to fail.
What's one big lie about the TV film industry you'd like to break?
That show business is populated by shallow egomaniacs. Showbiz is populated by by some shallow egomaniacs, but it's not everybody.
Yeah.
Some of the nicest, most kind, generous, compassionate people I know are in this business, and I don't think. I don't think the public has that perception from the outside.
What's one change you'd like to see in the world?
More justice. Mm. More justice for all, not just for some.
Justice by?
Justice meaning hard work and perseverance, in addition to being their own reward, lead to a life of peace and plenty for oneself and for one's family. The basics get met. Food, clean water, shelter, the right to worship or not, the right to speak one's mind. These are, I think, basic human rights. So it's a just world. That I've just described. At least that's my version of just.
What do you want your legacy to be?
I wanted kids to read. That he was a good storyteller. Mm. You know? I don't know. He could go twice as high. I don't know. Storytelling and being a storyteller is it's a great privilege for me, and I feel like I stand in a line that has a great tradition to it, I can't believe that I find myself, you know, legitimately claiming storyteller status because it's the most glorious job in the universe.
What inspires you?
Humanity at its best. When we rise to our highest level of expression, when we go deep, when we go deep into our emotions and reveal the depth of our caring, wrecks me every time.
What's one book every dreamer should read and why?
Oh, boy. A book every dreamer should read? The Little Prince, Esupere.
Okay.
Because what is important is actually what is essential, rather, is invisible to the eye.
How do you define success?
Well, my friend Tony Robbins defines it by doing what you want, when you want, where you want, with whom you want, for as long as you want. That ain't a bad definition.
You're pretty hip. I mean, at 60 something, you're way hipper than I am.
Okay.
Let's just be honest.
I'm not going to argue with you there. Go ahead. Go on.
And you're pretty on the pulse of culture and what's going on.
Okay.
What's one trend you're getting excited about?
I'm getting excited about the trend of people standing up and resisting. Mm. People remembering that this is a democracy and that their voice counts, that their voice matters. I think I'm getting excited about the trend of people re-engaging with the politics that rule this nation. I'm excited that the people are waking up. Mm. I think that there are signs of spring, even here in our own country. When you have a people's protest going on in Hong Kong, and they are carrying signs into these confrontations with authorities that say, give me liberty or give me death.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you contrast that and the origins of those kinds of slogans to the underpinnings of the founding of this country, and to see that we have come so far as to be really asleep, sleepwalking, somnambulating through this modern era. I'm excited by the fact that we might be waking up to the fact that we've just been away too long from the process, from having our hands on the wheel.
Yeah.
We've let others do the heavy lifting for us, and they have lifted us into a crisis of untold proportion.
Yeah.
So there's that.
That's a pretty heavy one. It's a rapid fire question. So you're talking like
I'm sorry. I'm talking like Armageddon over here, doom and gloom, LeVar. I guess I'm also excited about AI.
Yeah,
and the trend of how we will navigate the complexities yet again of technology, butting up against our use of technology, butting up against our level of maturity, right? Just because you can doesn't always mean you should.
No, and I come from the tech space, working in the development space, and there's a lot of things that I go, what is our moral responsibility?
Right.
What is our obligation to humanity?
Right. And in this country, we tend to worship money over everything else, and so money becomes the driving factor, the engine driving the train of decisions, and that's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
And neither is it human, nor is it humane.
Yeah.
And we've made a lot of questionable decisions for greed.
Yeah.
And we need to put a stop to that.
Yeah. Next to last question.
Yeah.
What do you wish you would have known when you started out?
I wish I would have known that no matter how much I worried or fretted, it was still going to be okay.
Yeah. I know that feeling. I get it. Final rapid fire question. What's one dream that LeVar Burton still wants to accomplish in his life?
I want to be useful like everybody. I want to be seen and I want to be useful. I want to know that my life's work was not in vain. I want to help move the needle. I believe in humanity. I believe in human beings. I'm rooting for us. Mm. And I want us to do better.
Wow. What's your final thought for us today?
Do better when you can. Mm-hmm. When and where you can. Just simply do better, you know? Expect more from yourself than just being here. Be present. Mm. Be active. Be engaged.
Yeah.
Life is not a spectator sport.
So good.
You cannot change the world from your couch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
it's been a privilege.
My pleasure, Michael.
Thank you.
Yeah, man.
What an insane honor it's been to have LeVar Burton on the show with us today. I always like to leave you my final thought about the conversation. There are many, many takeaways I could give you in today's show, but the big one for me is that we need to have conversation. Not only conversation with people that look like us, sound like us, talk like us, but we also need to have conversation with people who come from a different point of view, from a different worldview, from a different experience. We need to hear each other's stories. We need to understand the pains, the joys, the struggles, the triumphs that we all encounter. It's in this that we grow and learn from each other. Thanks so much for listening to today's show. Now it's your turn. We believe you were created for greatness, that your dreams and ideas matter. So dream big and change the world around you.
Les mères de famille, les enfants peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant dans quelques mois. Lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.